This is Suno India Production. You can now listen to all our episodes on our Android and iPhone app. Download it now.
Since the past few weeks, street dogs issues have been in the news. A Gurugram District Consumer Forum recently banned 11 foreign breeds of dogs in its district. This order was passed after a woman filed a complaint, that is in 2019, saying that a domesticated pit bull attacked her, injuring her severely. In the meanwhile, in Delhi, where stray dogs are on the rise, a Aam Aadmi Party candidate running for municipal polls is talking about having dog shelters and also having a campaign for people to adopt stray dogs. AAP chief spokesperson Saurabh Bharadwaj calls it the Be Indian, Adopt Indian campaign. There are several cases being heard in different high courts across India and the Supreme Court in relation to stray dog biting or attacking incidents. Hi, I'm Menaka Rao, the host of this episode of the Suno India Show. I wanted to understand what can help control such incidents of stray dog attack, as well as ensure that their welfare is kept in mind. I spoke to Neha Panchamia. She is the founder and president of Rescue Pune, whose rescue and rehabilitation work has provided direct aid to thousands of animals of over 200 plus different species since 2007. She is an animal rescue specialist and wildlife conservationist. She has been working with animals at grassroots level in Maharashtra. She is also the managing committee member of Pune District's Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, Maharashtra. Hi, Neha.
Hey.
I've been wanting to talk to you about the issue of stray dogs particularly, because it's been in news since the past few weeks or so. And as we know that, you know, the regulation of stray animals and pets is closely linked to rabies control as well as animal rights. Could you give me an overview of the major laws related to stray dogs and domesticated ones? And what is the extent to which these laws are implemented?
The main law, the Parent Act, which is the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals Act 1960, is the main act which protects animals. And if we are talking about dogs, that's the law which is applicable. Under the PCA 1960, there are several other amendments which have been made over time, additions, and this also includes the animal birth control rules of 2001, which now are also likely to get amended. But the animal birth control rules are the ones applicable when it comes to talking about stray dog population management, when it talks about whether the only mention of rabies is in that, in the ABC rules. And besides that, I think besides the PCA, which broadly, covers all the aspects related to whether cruelty, whether animal birth control related to stray dogs, everything is in that. But besides that, there are certain municipal acts. So for example, I'm based in Maharashtra. So there is the Maharashtra Municipal Act, and that talks about pet registration as well, but that is not of stray dogs, that is for pet dogs, which is companion animals that people own in their homes. And the reason I'm even mentioning this is because we broadly categorize animals as either pet animals or stray animals, there is actually the WHO that has classified dogs into four categories. And this is where the lines get blurred between pets and strays, simply because the first category, which it talks about, is the dog which is supervised and has restricted movement. So like a pet that you may have in your home that is supervised at all given times. Then the second category is sort of the unsupervised pet. And this is a category that's very common in India, where we say that the pet is mine, but people leave it free roaming during the day. So very often those dogs are not neutered and also contribute greatly to increasing the stray animal population, because they're going out and freely mating. Very commonly seen in bastis, where there's a high density of not just human population, but also stray dog population. And then this category of dogs as well. So that's the second category. The third category is your, so they call it the community animals, but basically it's where they are street dogs. So they're not owned by anybody. They don't have one particular owner, but they do depend on humans to feed them or on human generated waste. And then the fourth category, which is the completely free ranging or feral dogs, as they call it, but free ranging, I mean, is the more polite word to use for it. But free ranging dogs is basically there is no dependent, there is no direct, you cannot point it out to, okay, there are restaurants here which are feeding the animals, or there is some animal person who is, you know, looking after community caretaker who is looking after the animals, and that is why the dogs are surviving. So these are free ranging. You can't pinpoint their dependency on any particular source. So these are the four categories of, I would broadly say, animals that, you know, dogs that you would find, and they fit into these. And each one of them play different roles in how they contribute to the street animal population. And honestly, the only one that doesn't contribute to the street animal population is the first category, the category of dogs, which is supervised by its pet owners at all given times, either kept in a home or if outdoors, then completely supervised. So that's the laws and sort of the categories of dogs that you would find. And to what extent are these laws implemented? The animal birth control rules do talk about the municipal corporations or, you know, cities which can take up the animal birth control programs. ABC is just one tool of what needs to be done. It's not the entire solution in itself, but ABC is one of the important components. I don't think that we have effectively implemented ABC in several parts of the country wherever it has been tried, and which is why it is touted to be one of the biggest failures. There are a lot of challenges to it. It's very resource heavy. When I talk about funds, it's very, very heavy. There's a lot of funding required for it, number one. Number two, we lack the expertise to do this in mass. It is not that we don't have good veterinary doctors in this country or the skill to do it, or the facilities or the infrastructure which cannot be put up. We have everything, but what happens is we have a dearth of it. There is a lack of it. There's not enough. Also, a lot of our geographies are very challenging. So certain cities where it may have worked very well because the geography and the population density is supporting of it. Whereas, there are certain places, for example, Pune, where we have, the geography doesn't really support. We have a lot of migration, a lot of villages, another twin city where there is a high dog population as well. So rabies has no correlation with the ABC program. Yes, it's just the ABC program is an opportunity to vaccinate the dog once, but that's not really going to help with, it's not providing the animal immunity for life for sure. But the truth is that a dog needs in the first time, it does require two shots. Even if it is an adult, okay, let's assume, if we give it one shot, at least it gets some protection. But again, that's very questionable. The other thing is it needs to be given annually. So catching those same dogs every year on year is a very, very, again, resource heavy, challenging task to do. In my observation, it's just the animals that are being looked after by community caretakers, which do get regular vaccinations. That too, if they are responsible. A large part of this community only feeds dogs. They don't even bother vaccinating it or neutering it. The responsible ones do. What are the other measures that need to be taken? And when I say other measures, I am not talking about euthanasia or mass killing, because that is scientifically proven to not work. There are lots of other things which need to be done. All the other categories of the dogs, very commonly in an ABC program, you'll see the dog catchers or the municipalities literally just going after the dogs which are found, the ones which are community dependents, because they are dependent on humans for food. But the other two categories are also great contributors, hard to catch. Either the owner is stopping somebody from the municipality from taking their pet for neutering, so-called irresponsibly owned pet, or it's that free-ranging feral dog that is very skittish and hard to catch. But then again, the question is, should you put your resources into that? Because it's been proven that, the mean age of a dog that is not dependent on humans is just about 3 years, and their litters don't survive. So there's a lot of thought that needs to be put into where we are putting our resources. And I think that's not done. which is why implementation is a problem, which is why results and seeing results is a problem. And I think that the ABC program is just mindlessly being implemented in most parts of the country. And there are very few places where they have planned and done it. And that too, even if large numbers of dogs are neutered, there is a rate at which it needs to be done. Today, there are scientific proper models like which one can use. These are open source that can be used to calculate at what rate you need to do ABC. Will it work for your city? Will it not? And I don't think that, you know, our government is putting enough effort into using these things that are available before implementation. So, yeah, that's what I'd have to say about this.
Then there are also these court orders that I want you to respond to, because, you know, they all come from different angles and it's very hard to understand what's really happening. There was this one order of the Gurgaon District Consumer Forum, which asked the municipal authorities to take into custody 11 breeds of foreign dogs that were adopted. You want to talk about that? Like, do these kinds of bans help in reducing hostile dog behavior against people?
Again, it's a very different segment of dogs that we're talking about. So I think the foreign breeds being spoken about here are generally the Rottweilers or the ones, you know, the pit bulls, which are touted to have, an aggressive behavior disposition. I mean, I've known Rottweilers that behave as friendly as, you know, as people know Labradors. And I've seen Labradors that are incredibly aggressive. So while, yes, there is a general behavior disposition of a certain breed, there's always nature and nurture when it comes to dogs. So I think it's about how animals are raised and what they are raised for. So I think that also there is a ban on the import of foreign breeds. So most of the dogs that you're seeing in our country of all these foreign breeds are ones which are bred in this country. So I think that the implementation of the breeders' rules, which actually regulates breeding, is far more important than anything else.
Could you explain that?
So there is the breeders' rules, which came out in 2017, which is also, rules as a part of the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals Act, which aims to regulate breeders, whether it's a person who's breeding a dog one time at home or whether it's somebody who's doing it commercially in a kennel. So if you are going to breed a dog, you have to be registered by your state animal welfare board. And this basically not just ensures animal welfare during breeding, but it also, in the whole inspection and check process, it does check whether the dog has a decent temperament, you know. So, and if an animal is well looked after, then you can only hope that the animals have, you know, good behavior, that the breeder is being careful about who they give the animals to and what they're being used for. So the breeders' regulations is really, really important. Again, implementation has been a challenge simply because till today, there are some states which do not have their state animal welfare board functioning. Several states where the board is formed, but it is not functioning. So there are district SPCAs who are supposed to implement this. So in Maharashtra, we do have implementation in place. Implementation is one thing, but in case of violations, the redressal, the implications of violating the rules, because the PCA, the fines and all are not so strong, it's still a challenge. But so lots of challenges. I mean, we have great laws. Implementation has been a challenge. But I think more so, there is no consequence, right? The consequence of violating the law is not strong. And I think once that change comes, things will be better. Whereas the foreign breeds are concerned, many people think like banning foreign breeds or breeding it itself is going to encourage Indian dog adoption. You know, the dogs or the mix of, you know, the mixed breeds of Indian origin in that sense, you know, are street dogs. And I don't think that that is necessarily true for several reasons, because there are advantages and disadvantages of both. Like with breeds, sometimes their behavior is more predictable. So the experience for the family and the dog may be better because one can sort of predict what it's going to be like. Whereas in Indian street dogs, it is out of a litter. Maybe two or three are okay for for a home as a companion animal. But some of them innately have a skittish nature. Even if you get them right at puppyhood, you know, you can't tell. So I've seen a lot of people go through maybe negative experiences with that. So it's not for everybody. And it doesn't mean that just because, you know, foreign breeds get banned, that's going to encourage street dog adoption. It's I think adoption is just an, you know, innate sort of decision that a person takes, that I want to adopt a dog from a shelter, or I want to adopt, a dog that doesn't have a home. Now, whether that's a Labrador or whether that's a, mixed breed dog, I think it's a decision taken by a person. And yes, the bias which is there of a mixed breed versus a pedigree has been there. It's always going to be there. But I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference if you ban foreign breeds. And in fact, I feel that the ban of the foreign breeds hasn't been the greatest thing in the world. Simply because the ones that are being bred in India, like there's been so much inbreeding because, one is not able to bring in newer lines, that the breeds are becoming, the negative traits are getting, to put it simply, it's just worsening the lines that we have right now. And people who want a boxer, people who want a Doberman, or people who want a German Shepherd are going to get one. So I don't think we're really helping the cause. In general, I don't think banning things is the way forward. I think regulating it, and there are challenges in that itself. So
the other order that I wanted to talk about was the Bombay High Court one, which said that the street dog should not be fed. What do you feel about,
There's a lot of matters that are coming up right now, and I think it's going to result in a lot of maybe policy changes, whereas street dogs are concerned, whether it's feeding, whether it's who's responsible for their care. I think this has come out of a lot of incidents of dog bites and attacks getting recorded, and no one taking responsibility for it, whether it's the government, whether it's people who look after these animals. As I said, there is a whole community out there of people who feed animals. And while it is an act of compassion, because it is heartbreaking to see an animal go hungry, and there is no doubt about it, but I feel like there's a lot of negativity that gets generated because of certain actions. And those actions are human actions. Those are not dog actions. I feel like it needs to be done very responsibly. It needs to be done with a plan in mind. And if that is not done, it honestly spells doom for the animals itself, the one that we are trying to show compassion towards.
Could you spell this out? Because actually I'm not clear about what you're talking about.
Okay, I'll give you a simple example. About 10 years back, my street had 4 dogs, okay? And what I did at that point is I did start feeding them. I fed them in a place where there was no people walking. So you see, the dogs tend to get sort of protective about the area that they rest in and the area that they feed in. So I fed them in an area where nobody would have an objection to it. That's one. Second thing is, I had a plan. There are 4 dogs. I wanted to make sure that there are no homeless animals on my street. So what I did is, number one, I did not feed any other dog that came. It would have to go somewhere else to find its resource. Number three, what I did is, I made sure that everyone closes their garbage bins on the in my street, so that they are only feeding from what I am giving them. They are not going and raiding anyone else's garbage. And the other dogs are not dependent on that either, who are coming in from outside. So I made sure that I got them neutered so that they were not increasing in population. And I also would vaccinate them every year. If any kind of health issue or anything came up with them, any problem, anyone faced anything, I would take responsibility for it. And I would try to sort that out. There was one dog who had chased a couple of, people. And I made sure that I got him adopted, because I want the other dogs to face the aftermath of it. Now, what happened is, over the years, the dogs, got old. One passed away, second passed away, third passed away. And I also made sure I told all the neighbors that I'm feeding the dog. Nobody else feed the dog, that I will take care of it.
Why should nobody else feed the dog?
Simply what I mean, because they were getting enough, I didn't want them to like go to 10 different places. What if that was not a suitable location and there was a high footfall over there? So many other people would then help me and say, okay, you know, I'd like to, you know, help you with the dog food this month or, you know, something like that. And that's fine. It was still a community effort, but somebody took responsibility of it. And I was like, you know, so that happened. And when the last dog passed away, in fact, there were people on the street who were very sort of anti-dog before. And they were like, oh, you know, should we get another one? I'm like, no, we worked so hard to get the street dog free. We have to keep it this way. And because there is no open garbage, because there is none of that, there have been dogs that have strayed in, but nobody stayed. They moved on to the next area. So that temptation that I shouldn't start feeding all the other dogs, because I don't want homeless dogs on my street. Okay, the like true welfare is not having dogs on the streets. They should be in homes. Now, if everyone decides to take up their own street and do this, but you can't feed that dog number 5, 6, 7, 8 that comes. If you've decided, okay, when I came, there are 4 dogs, and this is what we're going to do. We're going to take care of this problem. Myself, as a community, have limited expectations from everyone. Take responsibility of it. And so you've got to have a plan. Now that it is over, even the people, I'm like, no, we're not getting more dogs on the street. You know, it's just let it be. And it's been almost 1.5, 2 years now, and we have no dogs on the street at all, because it's not a conducive environment for them, because now nobody is feeding them. And
so the others don't stray in at all.
They stray
all,
in and like go away. They have no reason to hang around here. There's no open garbage. They're not getting food here. Everyone's gates and all are closed. So they are moving on wherever. You see, over time, imagine if everyone did this. Maybe it would just take care of the problem.
Yeah, that's a good model if someone does want to feed dogs. But you basically, or cats, I'm assuming, it's the same logic, right?
Cats, yeah, I mean, same logic. But, you know, the thing with cats is, unlike dogs, they access multi-levels. So controlling where they go and what they do is definitely harder. But yes, conceptually the same.
In the Delhi's municipal election, one of the candidates, he spoke about adopting Indian dogs and providing dog shelters.
Mm-hmm.
You've mentioned this earlier, but do you think that is the lack of adoption of Indian dogs a barrier to reducing the stray dog population? Like, because we don't want Indian breeds, therefore, you know, we have too many dogs on the streets?
You know what? Yeah, I think they're just, I mean, adoption is great. I mean, if one can give an animal a home, that's amazing. But I don't think it's the only solution anyway. I think that one needs to, even having shelters is something that is going to become the need of the hour. For example, we have gaushalas for abandoned cattle. Technically, these are also abandoned, you know, animals that have the potential to be companion animals. Our government does need to put up good quality, basic, low cost models where, because there are certain areas where the population density of these stray dogs is very high. And I think even if one targets just those areas where the population density is high, it does not have to be done for areas where there is a lower density of dog population, because you see a lot of the problems come when the population density becomes high, because dogs are pack animals. So if you're going to have 20 dogs on the street or 15, 20 dogs, obviously they are going to feel strength in numbers and become a territorial pack. But then you will see chasing incidents. You will hear of attacks. So if the numbers are kept in check, I mean, ideal world scenario is to not have homeless animals. So I think that, and there is not enough homes for this. So I mean, while spreading the message of adoption is really important, because there can't be better care than, you know, a person, every dog having a home. We might have to think of shelters, but then again, you know, shelters cannot become hellholes for these dogs. Like, you know, with time moving forward and incidents being reported, I think certain areas where there's high dog population density, one may need to think of, shelters where, you know, say all the 5 freedoms of animal welfare are met. And this might not be the cheapest exercise, but it is something that needs to be done. So I honestly think that putting up a great animal shelter, per ward might be the way forward. You know, it's not, there is a requirement. I mean, space is going to be required. I do think there's enough community, people in the community who would help out at these places. But the basic requirements need to be taken care of by the government if this is to go forward.
What do you mean by five freedoms?
So the five freedoms of animal welfare, I mean, this is generally like a gold standard, which is, it's known globally. It was one of our Supreme Court judgments has quoted this as well, that, the five freedoms of animal welfare must be met. It's like the freedom from thirst, hunger, malnutrition. So basically that an animal should be fed and provided water. Then, and this is applicable for not just street dogs, but, companion animals at home as well. Freedom from discomfort, from pain, injury and disease. So making sure that the animal gets veterinary care and, is not suffering badly from some chronic illness. And freedom from fear and stress basically is kept in an environment where that animal is not scared all the time. So if you keep 100 animals in a tiny shelter, there's going to be a lot of stress and fear because you can't have so many living together. You'll have the dominant ones and then submissive ones. So, they should, if animals are kept, they should be free from fear and distress or stress. And then the fifth freedom is the freedom to express normal behavior. So, they should be basically, they should be, have access to maybe socializing with other animals or to be able to bark without disturbing others. It's very normal for a dog to bark. Or, for example, they should have proper space to be able to run, have proper facilities, that kind of thing. So if these five freedoms are maintained in a shelter, there is no harm in a shelter, but these five freedoms need to be put into check.
So there are some people who rescue stray dogs and cats and take them and, they keep a lot of them at home. Does this help in reducing stray animal problems?
So, the first question is whether an animal needs to be rescued or not. Okay, so a lot of people pick up puppies and kittens and take them home. It's not really going to solve the problem if you pick up healthy pups and kittens from the streets, unless you intend to adopt them for life. Okay, and then again, what I just explained about five freedoms, right? I have, again, this is a problem. This is very, very unspoken of, and we don't have any laws surrounding it. And this is, worldwide, it is known as animal hoarding. And animal hoarding is not just bad for the animals, but it's also bad for the person who's going through it, because very likely that they are suffering from, it is a mental illness actually. So people who keep very large number of animals at home, that there's no problem with that, but it's about how they're keeping them. And most scenarios, I would say 90% scenarios where I have seen people keep a large number of animals at home, the animals, there is not even the basics, basics of animal welfare standards being maintained over there. The animals are not happy. They're in a horrible condition. So I think people who rescue animals and take them home, while it is a very noble act, I think one needs to have some check and balance on that as well, because today's time, you have two spectrums of them. One, you have animal hoarders who are keeping like 50 and 60 cats in their home, and the animals are not in a good condition. They don't have veterinary records. If you ask them a straight up question of how many animals do they have, the first sign of a hoarder is they won't even have the exact answer. It's like asking how many children you have and the person is blank because, maybe 40, 50. So if you don't have an idea of how many animals you have, it begins from there. So that's a sure telltale sign of an animal hoarder. The other thing is they don't have veterinary records. Many of the animals will not be neutered. So animals are just multiplying in there. Many of these are in residential areas. So the neighbors also get very hassled by it because a large number of cats sometimes is, their urine has a strong smell, and so many together, it gets, exaggerated and it does become problematic. Most importantly, the animals are not happy. You can't keep so many together. So rescuing animals is great. If you can help an animal and then find it a home, yes, it's an amazing thing to do, because there's very few people out there caring for animals. But one needs to know where to draw the line. Animal welfare can become animal cruelty in no time. There's a very thin line dividing it. And I think most people are not conscious when they tip over the line. Also, the other extreme of it, you know, there's this concept that has really started now. It's called fostering. Fostering technically means that you take in an animal and you voluntarily foster it. In abroad, organizations do look for fosters. And fosters essentially means you're opening up your home and heart to an animal that may get adopted potentially in the future. And generally, the organization takes care of the costs of it. And then the person voluntarily offers their home and their, of course, their care for it. But in today's times, fostering, or rather rescuing and fostering, has become like a business, and where people are just taking in animals at home and charging people for it. So essentially, they've become inpatient facilities for dogs and cats. And people are doing this where they go and register themselves as NGOs in their houses. They have 20 dogs and cats at home. They're charging people for it. And that's not fostering. In fact, that does become problematic. And what happens is, in many of these scenarios, they don't have attached veterinarians, and I'm seeing this as a rising problem. So I think one needs to question whether to rescue or not. When you do rescue, how many are you rescuing? Are you crossing the line in terms of how many animals you're keeping at home? Do you have the means to take care of it? You know, so I think people are becoming boarding facilities and inpatient units for street animals, and are called, you know, and just the fact that they are street animals. Otherwise, there is no charity in the act. You're still charging money for it, and which is fine, but you know, you need to be mindful about how you're doing it and how you're going about it. So I think that rescuing animals and taking them home is fine. I did it when I was really young, but I would take one animal home and I still got grief from my mother for it. But of course, I drew the line somewhere and I did adopt that animal. And then there were one or two that I got adopted. But you know, people who take large number of animals home and then have no check and balance on it, it is becoming problematic, not just for forget the people around them, but it's becoming problematic for the animals also. And then many times these animals get dumped on the street, or the puppies become big and then people just leave them. And that's worse. That's worse than them growing up on the streets and learning how to live on the streets. So it is becoming problematic.
There's a constant fear, you know, especially in, you know, Delhi, etc., where, you know, dogs are attacking and dogs are biting on the streets. And even if we assume they are vaccinated, like, how do we reduce these events? Because you have to go to the hospital and get yourself vaccinated and against rabies, whether or not you know it's vaccinated. As you know, there's always a fear of dogs attacking or biting. And, you know, people need to get shots whether or not these dogs are vaccinated, right? So, and what are the other models in different countries or around the world that can be emulated? Or maybe, you know, models in different cities also.
Okay, so let's deal with the first thing first. Okay, having a free-ranging animal, now whether it's a dog or a snake or anything like that. Now, dog, obviously, it comes in the domestic category. Okay, the fear of something that can harm you is something that is instilled amongst us based on our experiences in life, right? You will have people telling you that there is nothing to be afraid of. And then there will be some people who are just innately afraid of animals, you know, and maybe because of some negative experience. I do believe that maybe at the age of two, one and two and three, I mean, the first word we learn is dog and cat, right? And it's associated in a very positive way. And then along in life come, you know, fears, experiences, those kind of things. And yes, there are, and for people who do have that fear, and, you know, interestingly enough, dogs do sense fear also. So, when you're walking, and if a more confident person, it can definitely be observed that a dog will probably not charge at them, but except as compared to somebody who has fear and is exuberating that body language and that. And you can't tell people, like, you know, get rid of your fear, then the dog won't bite you. Once a person's had a negative experience or that fear is set inside them, you can't just take that away instantly. I mean, it's one of the reasons why my organization really focuses on community education and so much education and awareness for younger children, so that we hope that, you know, they grow up with lesser fears and then compassion comes later. There is, yes, the dog bite incidents have been on the rise, and that is directly related to the dog population that is on the streets, especially in certain parts of the country. The fear is real. I mean, it is not, it's not irrational. Of course, there are lots of incidents. I mean, it is mortifying to be chased if you're on a bike or on, you know, on foot by a pack of dogs. Anyone will get scared. But the thing is, the solution to this is to manage the dog population. We have to find an effective way to do that. There are solutions. Which is the right one for this city, this locality? I think those are the questions that need to be asked. I think we look at dog population management too broadly. As diverse as our country is, I think our solutions also have to be diverse. They have to be very local, because what may work in Mumbai may not necessarily work in Delhi, and what worked in Hyderabad or Ahmedabad or is being put into use somewhere else may not necessarily work for Pune. So I think that our solutions also need to be local. They need to be based on the size of our problem, then the geography, the ratio of the urban density of people. So it has to be broken down to as local as possible. And I think because we are looking for broad solutions is maybe the reason why this is failing. And we need to have a comprehensive dog population management program, which has ABC as a part of it, but it's not the entire solution. We need to enforce registration. It has not been implemented in so many cities. We do need to look at shelters for either old dogs or, you know, you can't expect them all to find homes, and they do die horrible deaths. So we do need to look at shelters. If we do need to look at the welfare, like we do look at for our larger animals, I mean, there are gaushalas for the old and abandoned. The government has made provisions for them. I think there should be good provisions being made for dogs as well, because they too are, you know, on our streets. So I think that needs to be a combination of things, you know, and I think that needs to be looked at. If you look at globally, in other countries, we do have, you know, there are kill shelters. So, for example, if an animal isn't put, if a free roaming animal is found, it's put into a shelter, and it's not adopted in 3 months, they euthanize it. And I'm not sure that I'm okay with that, because I think we should be able to provide for our animals. I think it'll be hard in the start when it starts, but I think it will ease out if it's done for a decade or two. Because, you know, of the limited lifespan these animals have. Unlike, you know, larger animals, dogs, on an average, you'll have 10 to 12 years. So I feel that if we do large-scale solutions at this stage, maybe in a decade or two, we might see a major difference. But there has to be a multitude of solutions which then contribute to the dog population management program and to controlling rabies, and which also has challenges of its own in implementation. So I think what works in other countries is a very hardcore solution of picking them up and euthanizing them, or euthanizing them, you know, in the pound after 3 months. And I'm not sure that I'm okay with that, but I think we have alternatives. Also, mass killing doesn't work, you know, going and just poisoning all dogs or catching them. And, you know, all these things that have been tried in the past, scientifically proven that it does not work. We do need to think of, you know, alternatives. And we have to remember that it has to be a mixture of solutions, and it has to be local. We cannot say this worked in this city and this will work for you. We need, you know, a proper, you know, statewide committee that is looking at animal birth control, dividing up areas into based on population density, human and animal, and thinking of better solutions. That's the only way forward, the way I look at it.
Thank you for listening to this episode. You can now listen to all our episodes on our Android and iPhone app. Download it now.